Bonk.
Jen.
How are you?
Doing great. How are you, cutie?
I'm doing great. Wow, that's it. What a nice thing to say right off the bat here.
And some people don't think it's a nice thing to say.
Cutie?
Yeah.
Okay, well,
You can't go around saying cutie to everyone is what I'm trying to say.
I think that's frowned upon. Yeah, I think in this context here, us being a married couple who romantically involved for many years.
You could say that.
Yes, we're married for many years. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank
you're
you, a sweetie.
Cutie. I guess I'm not a cutie because you didn't say anything.
I said sweetie just now.
All right. Yeah, that's not cutie. That's
also cutie.
Sure. Sure.
Oh, geez. Okay. Off on
We're going to have a discussion later about this. You can be sure of it.
Off on a terrible, terrible foot here as we kick off another week of podcasting here. But that said, I'm in a good mood. You just had a nice, very comfy looking nap on the couch.
Oh, wonderful. There's nothing better than like in the evening. You hear just like kind of the low rustle of leaves and birds outside. And I just kind of lean back on our reclining couch and the dogs cuddle up next to me and it's just heavenly.
And I grabbed you by the shoulders and pulled you up the couch and I said, wake up, we must podcast. The people are clamoring.
That's right. Yeah, that's... And you know what? I understand. I have a responsibility to podcast and I'm here to fulfill that.
We are podcasters above all.
That's right. Above all else.
That's our main thing. That's our business card. That is our defining characteristic is podcaster.
Our whole identity is built around the fact that we have this podcast.
Thinking about podcasts all day long.
That's right. Well, especially you.
Especially me? The day job and stuff.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I got to do a lot of podcast stuff like every day.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also the streaming stuff. So it's a lot. And I just launched another podcast. So... It's a lot of podcasts going on.
Do you want to plug that podcast at the top again?
Sure. Fire Escape Cast, video game podcast. Me and Mike Mahardy, Mary Kish, talking about video games every other week. Join the fun. I think I'm pulling a Ben Hansen at this point, where he always said that he listened to more talk about video games than he actually played video games. And I always thought that was crazy because he didn't really play a lot, but he just like is nonstop all day listening to podcasts about video games. I can definitively say I have spent way more time talking on podcasts than I've spent listening to podcasts.
Yeah.
Many, many, many times over.
It's probably, that's probably good, right?
I mean.
And you're a doer.
I like making my own stuff. I like creating. I don't dislike listening to podcasts, but there's one podcast I listen to.
Yeah, you're very, very selective with the podcasts that you enjoy.
Yeah, it's not by design, but yeah, I just listen to the one podcast comes out every week. It's like an hour, and then I spend many hours a week either talking on podcasts or editing them. Mm-hmm. And I guess the same thing with the Twitch stream. I guess I stream all the time, but I don't really watch streamers. So.
No, you don't watch streamers.
No. Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining us here on this podcast.
It's called Panning the Stream.
It's called Panning the Stream. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts.
Wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.
Exactly. We were just talking about podcasts, and it's kind of ironic considering we are on a podcast right now.
A little too ironic, if you ask me.
Yeah, so if you do listen to podcasts, go to your podcast platform and download our podcast, Panning the Stream.
If you're not already listening to it.
Yeah, I don't know why you're listening if you're not subscribed. I don't know if you know who we are, what we're talking about, or how you found this. Maybe you're just in a deli, and for some reason the deli is playing this podcast.
Well, in that case, I hope this is the start of a wonderful relationship between you, the podcast listener, and us, the podcast, that will continue through many weeks of you subscribing and listening and hopefully, watching along to what we watch. And maybe, just maybe, we'll get ourselves a spot in the permanent rotation of your podcast.
Perhaps. So. It's prime real estate.
Yeah.
Do you think our podcast has ever played in a place of business? We've got a humble little mom and pop podcast here. Do you think it's ever played throughout a little coffee shop or a deli or anything like that?
Well, that's what I was going to say. When I worked at a coffee shop, I had free reign to play whatever music I wanted or whatever because no one was ever in the store. So I assume there are circumstances like that throughout the nation, the internation even. And I'm sure there's someone out there that just subscribes to Panning the Stream and we came up on a podcast playlist or something.
Or somebody's Alexa misheard something and they thought we were saying a song that sounded like Panning the Stream. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds about right.
The famous hit, Planning the Beam. That's it. I'm sorry. I'll go.
Don't go. We have to do the podcast. We've been talking about the podcast.
Oh, right.
For a long
that's
time
right. I
now.
I forgot why we were here, but that's right. Podcast. That's right.
Well, you know what? You have a podcast, so I think that makes you a somebody, which means you're not a nobody.
Oh, nice.
God, we suck.
No, that was okay.
Really?
No, it was bad, but I just don't want you to feel bad about it. But now I do. I changed my mind. You should feel bad about that.
What's wrong with us?
A lot of things. We have a lot of issues.
I'm going to chalk it up to, I also just woke up from a nap, so I'm foggy right now, so I'm not firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, it's a perfect excuse.
I didn't actually nap.
I know. That's why I'm saying it's an excuse and nothing more.
Okay. I laid in the hammock for 2 minutes and then got upset about the Wi-Fi signal being weak out there. And so now I'm trying to figure it out.
You're going out there to relax in the hammock and then you're worried about the Wi-Fi signal out there?
Well, because I was like, well, it'd be nice to be able to like sit out here, like sit on the deck while I had to do like a video call or something sometime. And so I tested, I laid down for like 2 minutes and I was like, hang on a second. Let me check the Wi-Fi. And I was like, those Google points aren't doing their job.
Yeah. I can't think of a less complimentary angle during a video call than for me to be laying on a hammock and like looking down at my phone from like a reclining position.
Well, I brought the old Panning the Stream table from the Pizzone.
That's right,
I
saw that.
It's a small table. I brought it out there. You can put a drink on there. You can put your phone on there. You can put a keyboard on there. So I figured, or a keyboard, a laptop. So
you could put anything on there.
Yeah. You put a dog on there, whatever you want. Well, Razor kind of runs the backyard now with the fetch frisbee fetish he's got now.
Razor is the Avon Barksdale of that backyard. He runs it.
Yes. We've been watching The Wire. Yes. You know, obviously we're talking about nobody this episode, but do you want to give a very quick six episodes in kind of rundown of how you're feeling about The Wire?
Extremely positive about The Wire.
What are the main takeaways? What are the main things grabbing you?
It obviously how realistic it feels. Nothing feels like overly dramatized or anything. Like how crazy things will happen, but there won't be any like build up to it. Like just in life, like bonkers shit happens when you least expect it. And you know, I also really like, unlike a lot of police procedurals and stuff like that, it focuses a lot on like the politics of the different levels of law enforcement,
the bureaucracy, and all that stuff.
Yeah, a lot of bureaucracy stuff, and a lot of frustrations, and a lot of good people having to make bad choices because they're put into that situation. They didn't really have a choice, you know. And it just kind of demonstrates how like fundamental change can't happen, which is one person. It has to be like a whole effort, a fundamental effort. But
yeah, so you always hear about like the system being broken, and then like I feel like lay people like us don't really know what that means, but like the show does a really good job of illustrating just how broken a system can be.
Absolutely.
And like from everything I've heard about how realistic it is, it's kind of like, oh, okay, I could see how this is how things go, and it feels pretty relevant 20 years later, you know?
Yeah. It's like, it shows like what's actually happening on the streets. It shows the policing of that, the surveillance. It shows what's going on in the police offices. And then like the outermost ring is like the media. And it doesn't go into like, at least the season we're watching, doesn't go super into the media aspect of it, but you hear it like, you know, how that's affecting public perception and how police have to make choices based on, you know, how they can manipulate the media to their gain, or how it can, you know, impede them or whatever. So it's really remarkable.
Yeah. All the things you're saying that you like about the show, you're just going to keep getting a lot more of it.
And the cast is great.
Yeah.
Amazing cast.
Just incredible. Like, all realistic characters, not a lot of just, like, villains or heroes or anything like that. Everyone's flawed. Everyone, yeah, it's good. It's really fucking good. But yes, as I said, remember back when I did that subpar segue? It's actually, in retrospect, it's worse now because we didn't actually segue.
Well, let's do a new one.
It's yours now.
Okay.
Ball's in your court.
Much like how The Wire explores small-time crime, in certain situations, the government has to pull the old assassin lever for extreme criminals or, I guess, political criminals and stuff like that. Entities of various kinds that needs dealing with. And when they do, they call upon assassins like Hutch Mansell.
Apparently, Hutch is a name.
In the film, Nobody.
Yes. Bob Odenkirk starred. Yes, as Hutch Mansell, also known as Nobody. Didn't know Hutch was a name.
I thought it was like a dog's name.
I could see that. Or like Hitch. Was Hitch Will Smith's name in Hitch?
Was it?
I don't know. I haven't seen Hitch.
You haven't seen Hitch?
No.
Really?
I was in like college when I came. I was like a college guy.
So what does that matter? You haven't seen Hitch?
I don't know a single dude that saw Hitch back then.
All right.
I don't know. Another, I'm sure it's fine. I'm sure Hitch is fine. You've seen Hitch?
It is fine. I mean, Eva Longoria's in it. Obviously, Will Smith, I think.
Kevin James,
right? Yeah. I think there's a lot of unrealistic romances going on in that movie.
Is it Kevin James and Eva Longoria?
I can't remember if Eva Longoria is Will Smith's love interest or Kevin James or possibly both.
Okay. Huh. All right. Interesting.
Yeah, but... Anyway, back to the movie we were doing this podcast on.
You got a segue back.
Yeah. Okay. So Hitch is a word that sounds like Hutch, which is the name of the main character.
Sure,
in
I'll take
Nobody.
It. I'll take it.
Played by Bob Odenkirk.
Yes, and I think the thing that I can't speak for everyone, but I know the way I felt when I heard about this movie's existence is I saw the trailer and I was like, "Huh, Bob Odenkirk being like a killer," you know, like it's. He's had this turn in his career where he's not just like the kind of underground comedy guy anymore. It's not just Mr. Show guy, thanks to Breaking Bad and then later Better Call Saul, because it's like, oh, okay, wow, that comedian is actually like this really great dramatic actor. But then to go from that to John Wick, basically, right, is such a bigger jump, I think. And he does it.
Well, and I think that's kind of the premise of the movie, is that like at the beginning of the movie, he's this like hapless, just like every day's the same, going to his 9-to-5. You know, wife and children don't really, they kind of look down on him or just are kind of disappointed.
It seems like a sad sack or just like he's a sap.
Yeah.
He's just kind of a eh.
Yeah. Something's missing from his life for sure. So, and you being surprised at like Bob Odenkirk taking on a John Wick kind of role is why it's so effective. It's because you look at him and you think it's the last person that would be capable of doing all this crazy shit. And that's kind of what at least the first part of the movie is kind of hinges on how people are underestimating him, which is my favorite thing, when people underestimate a character and then they just fucking own them.
You mentioned while we were watching it that you love movies like secret awesome people.
Yeah.
Like, are there other examples you can think of like secret awesome people movies?
I mean, I guess like it's hard off the top of my head. There's always like, you know, tiny examples like, you know, I mean, Whiplash, I feel like, is a good example because he just comes out at the end and does that crazy solo. I don't know. I can't think of many off the top of my head, but it's a very cool concept.
Yeah. And I feel like they don't, like, you kind of know where it's going because you see the trailer, you know what the movie's about. But like, they do a good job of kind of setting the scene of like his job and showing like his Monday through Friday, right, and like repeated, you know, coffee stuff. And it's like, wife doesn't respect him and all that. And then I think it's like, so there's a home invasion. Mm-hmm. And he's, you know, he's got all the skills to just kill the
well,
shit.
Well, we don't
out
know that
people.
At this point.
I'm just saying, like, from like the trailers and stuff. It's just like,
well, I didn't even know, because I didn't know if it was going to be a thing where he's trained or something.
Oh, interesting.
Or if he was actually had those skills just like, you know, simmering below. So I didn't know.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, yeah, because he doesn't do like shit really. He just kind of like, he's got a chance. He's got the drop on the girl. It's a girl and a guy breaking in. He's got a golf club and like, he doesn't do anything, and they wind up just getting scared and leaving. And, like, right, everyone just kind of, like, disrespects him even more. Like, people at work, the neighbors are like, oh, why didn't he, like, fuck him up, basically.
Yeah, I would have fucked them up if it was me. But later we realize it's because he has such a, you know, unbelievable eye for this stuff, he was able to recognize that the gun that the girl was carrying was completely unloaded.
Yeah.
So he didn't want to whack her in the head if she didn't even have a loaded gun on her.
Yeah, and you could tell that they were just like scared idiots, basically, and he didn't want to, like, because he knew he could just murder them, you know, and it wasn't worth it, you know.
Right, but the problem is, while grabbing a bunch of money out of their like key bowl or whatever, they accidentally grab his daughter's kitty cat bracelet, he thinks. So he makes it his mission to track down these people. And in the process, you kind of see him have a little bit of a renewed energy because it's giving him a sense of purpose, like as if something that's been lying dormant forever is finally getting awakened, which is exactly what happens. And one of my favorite scenes is when he's like going from tattoo parlor to tattoo parlor to try to track down the tattoo artist who gave this one of the robbers a like distinguishing wrist tattoo, which was pretty unrealistic because there's no way. There's so many tattoo parlors. She could have gotten her tattoo done in a different country.
You know? It could have been a vacation, a spring break thing. Yeah.
Yeah. But we'll give him that, whatever.
Sure, yeah.
Give him the benefit of the doubt. But he goes into this like tough looking tattoo parlor with all these like biker looking guys. And he's like, I need to know who did this tattoo. He points to the picture of the tattoo. And the guy's obviously giving him trouble because, like I said, they're underestimating him because he just looks like any suburban dad, mid-50s.
Looks like nobody.
He looks like nobody. But then one of the, there's like an older Vietnam vet that's in the tattoo bar, and he recognizes this tattoo that Bob Odenkirk, that Hutch has on his wrist, which is like two cards.
It's like a 7 and a 2. Yeah. I don't know if that's the Dead Man's Hand, the old Wild Bill Hickok.
Okay. He got shot. They never really explain the significance of that, but if it is something, maybe it's just some card combination that people that are smarter than me would be able to recognize. But as soon as he sees that, he's like, oh, thank you for your service. And he like runs out and locks the door behind him.
Like
and
cartoon, that, like door with like the slidey thing. And
yeah. And that's like when, like, you know, I'm kind of right there with the tattoo biker guys in being like, oh shit, something's about to go down. Because like at that point, I didn't know that he was capable of crazy shit. That was really fun. I love when the guy recognized the tattoo and was like, oh shit, I'm going.
Yeah, and like I'm trying to remember, like, it actually doesn't go down there, right? Because like I feel like the tattoo guys realize
they
like,
back
oh,
off.
We shouldn't fuck with this guy.
They back off.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, like, it's all done with a certain comic timing and everything, where it's like, this is very John Wick in a lot of ways, but it knows that it's, like, a goofy take, mm-hmm. or like, satirical is not the word, but, like, there is a comedic bend to this that John Wick didn't have, and I think it's because of Odenkirk.
Yeah, totally. There is really good comedic timing. I think the fact that they lean in so hard to him just being, like, this apparently average guy... who has these ridiculous abilities, and obviously the violence is just over the top crazy, versus like John Wick, which is more like, okay, this is, you know, he's not like your average suburban guy. He's like, he obviously has something special about John Wick. He lives in this beautiful, immaculate house. It's just him and this dog. You know what I mean? There's sure. a mystery to John Wick. We think we have Bob Odenkirk figured out at the beginning of this movie. It turns out we don't. That's another thing, too. I feel like if I saw the trailer for this movie and it was anyone but Bob Odenkirk, I would have been very skeptical of it. But knowing his history and that he tends to attach himself to projects that are, you know, arguably the top tier projects, I was way more excited about the idea. I thought it was just going to be kind of like a John Wick knockoff.
Yeah, that's the thing. If it was like Gerard Butler or something, I would have been like, oh, it's just like a second-rate John Wick, you know?
Well, and Gerard Butler also has that history of like being... He's been in those types of movies for like ever, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it would just be seen as like a B-tier John Wick, you know, mm-hmm. where it's like the Odenkirk factor can't be understated here because it is the thing that everyone notices, I think, when you first hear about this movie. But the first like time he really just goes off the handle is he's riding a bus and just these, oh God, these idiot drunk guys crash their car. I love the scene where they get out and they like slow-mo, they see the bus and they're like, bus! I love that. And you can just instantly tell that like anyone on that bus sees these guys and is like, oh, fuck, these guys are going to be the worst.
You've had that feeling before, right? I know I have.
Oh, yeah, if you just see someone like, yo, in San Francisco, for sure, where it's like somebody's just being like really obnoxious or shitty or something, and you see that they're getting on the bus, and it's like, oh, man, I just hope, yeah, put the headphones on,
just leave
look
me
down,
alone,
just
leave me alone, leave me alone.
And it's just so obvious that this like group of five guys is like not going to leave anyone alone.
Right.
And so there's like a young girl there, and Odenkirk kind of sees that, I think, as an excuse to like, all right, let me just make sure she gets home safe. And like he's like begging for them to pick a fight. Like he wants to unleash all this stuff.
Yeah. And they make some pretty aggressive overtures to the girl. If I was her, I'd be extremely concerned. It seemed like, because they were saying like, oh, a girl traveling alone on the bus.
And they like surround
dumb.
Her.
Yeah. Really, really, really bad news. So yeah, he uses that as the catalyst to just completely destroy everyone. And what I really like about the fighting choreography in this movie is that, unlike a lot of movies where there's like, you know, a singular hero that kind of destroys wherever he goes, or, you know what I mean, destroys people wherever
sure,
he
yeah,
goes.
Yeah.
He, Odenkirk's character actually like takes hits, you know what I mean? Especially in the beginning of this fight, which I kind of interpreted as him like, okay, he has some rust, but now he's getting back into the flow of things. But the fact that he actually takes pretty significant damage.
I actually, during that scene, I was thinking about like Uncharted, because it was kind of a just trope that like Nathan Drake is constantly just like falling off trains and getting stabbed and landing on stuff and breaking bones. And it's just like every Uncharted game, it's just like Nathan Drake is constantly getting fucked up. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, and like bleeding and just like kind of hobbling from thing to thing. And it kind of made me think of that. It's like, oh man, he's actually like getting, like he's pulling knives out of his side and stuff. Like he's getting fucked up.
Yeah, but he's tough and he, you know, knows how to handle that kind of stuff, I guess. My favorite part, that scene was so fucking awesome. And my favorite part of that scene was when he gets thrown out of the train and he's just laying on the ground and all the guys are just like totally overcome by their injuries and stuff on the train. And you kind of think that's the end of it. But he, Hutch gets back up and just goes right back into the train and kicks their ass and like the with such finality. Then like
he like walks back on and he's like, okay, I'll just take this like seatbelt and I'll take this pole, and everyone's just like, oh god, are we doing this again? Like fuck.
Yeah, and at the end of it, like apparently one of the guys die. One of the guys, he needs to give a tracheotomy to because he's choking on his own blood. Which was fucking brutal.
Takes a straw and puts it in his like neck hole. He like cuts a hole in his neck. And, man. Yeah.
Not good.
It's a violent movie for sure.
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole thing about the movie.
Yeah. Right? It's in very much that John Wick way of just like, we're just going to show everything and it's going to be like not a lot of razzle dazzle. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some really like dynamic camera stuff going on there, but like, people are just getting shot in the fucking face, you know?
That's another thing I noticed, too. I thought the directing in this movie was really great. There was some really interesting shots and stuff. Like, when he was on the train before the fighting started, like, there was this bottle that the camera just kind of followed till it hit his foot and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, the buck stops here kind of thing.
Yeah.
But a little factoid that I read. Apparently, Bob Odenkirk did the vast majority of his stunts in this movie, and he trained for 2.5 years.
Jesus. Yeah,
for this movie. But you remember that movie Jiu-Jitsu? Did we cover that for
Panda Stream? We did, yeah.
The main character in Jiu-Jitsu, that guy, Alain Moussy, do you vaguely remember his face?
Yeah, the terrible actor. Yeah, yeah.
He was actually one of the guys in the train.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, see, he seems like a guy that would be really good in fight scenes or fight choreography.
Exactly. He's a stuntman. Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, he seems like he'd be very good at that. But like, when you hire him to actually say lines and stuff, it's like, maybe you should just keep him as part of the fight.
Totally.
You know? Yeah. But yeah, the bus scene is just excellent. It really, really illustrates what he's capable of.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the rest of the movie, it's just like, you know, they're like, okay, we're dealing with, this is not nobody here.
Yeah. And when, you know, situations where, like, that's one thing about the movie, like situations where you would feel like helpless for the characters, like you would feel like, oh fuck, well, this is it. They're going down now, or just, you never feel helpless, or you never feel like what you're watching is a hopeless situation. Like literally never. And it never even sets it up to make you feel that way. It's like, it's always like, okay, this crazy shit's happening, but you know who he is. He's a fucking, like, nuclear weapon.
It was his job to go into buildings and, like, clear them out of, like, terrorists and stuff like that by himself.
So it was kind of really fun as a viewer because it was so exhilarating to watch, and you never had that come down where it's like, oh, shit, he's, I don't know, being held in he's, like, chained up and they're torturing him or something. There's never a moment like that where you feel like, oh, he's fucked now. It's always, you're always riding high because you know, like, he's going to fuck them up so bad.
Yeah, he'll get hurt and everything, or there's one part where he kind of gets tased and kidnapped, but he, like, pretty quickly gets out of it.
Yeah, that scene is awesome, too, when he's kidnapped and he's in the trunk and, like, you know, he's just, it's not just that he can fight. He's really crafty and really creative in his, in the way that he takes people down. Like, he uses this umbrella. He uses the car to his advantage. They get into an accident and his captors, they get killed. But the one guy is like on the way to dying. And I noticed that he tends to tell people who are either dead or about to die his whole backstory. It's like, all right, I'm going to give you the satisfaction of knowing what my deal is. Like, he did it the same thing to all the people that had died in his house that he killed before he burned them alive. Or I'm sure just a few of them were alive at that point. But yeah, I thought that was cool.
It's like a reverse Metal Gear Solid thing where like the boss is dying and always tells like, oh, well, my village burned as a child and I learned my psychic abilities, and it's like as the other person's dying, he tells it. But yeah, you mentioned earlier that he's really good at getting out of these situations, but you know what I don't want to get out of is my 8-sleep bed in the morning.
I'm right there with you, Dan.
My God, that 8-sleep bed. I tell you what, we've told you about it the last couple weeks. We're still sleeping on it. It is our main bed for years to come.
Well, speaking of getting out of the bed, a fun feature that I don't know if we talked about yet is the alarm feature. So you can set your alarm for the bed. Like, I have mine set to 7 o'clock. So at 7 o'clock, the bed starts vibrating, and you could set the intensity of the vibrations.
So, on either side, too. So it's like, if I want to get up at 8 and you want to get up at 6.
Exactly. Yeah. So we could have separate, just like there are separate, you know, heating or cooling sides, you could do the separate alarms. And it's really effective. Like, because I don't want it to bother you, and it definitely wakes me up. Like, I'll start dreaming, and there'll be, like, an earthquake in my dream, and then mm-hmm. it's like, oh, shit, that's just my alarm.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've loved how you can change the temperature over time. Because, like, when I get into bed, I think I've realized I like it cold, because mm-hmm. it feels really good to get under the covers and everything. But then I don't want it cold in the morning, because then if my body's cold, I don't want to get out of bed.
Sure.
So it's like, I can change it to, like, in the last hours of sleep, it gradually starts getting warm, mm-hmm. and so that helps me get out of bed in the morning. And it tracks your sleep score and all that stuff and your health. And I've been monitoring that. I should get some more sleep, it seems. But yeah. How are you? Are you in the red, the green?
I think I'm like 85 or okay. 70 for my sleep score.
I'm like 68 or something like that. Okay. So I got to work on it. But you could work on your sleep score or sleep health, sleep fitness level.
That's right.
By going to 8sleep.com. And you can use the code PANNINGTHESTREAM to get $100 off at 8sleep.com.
That's EIGHTSLEEP.com.
Tell them we sent you. I guess that's what the code's for. So I did really love, because like the main bad guy, it's kind of a reverse John Wick situation, because that guy that he puts the neck thing mm-hmm. into, the tracheotomy thing, his brother, right, is Julian?
Or uncle?
We'll go with uncle. Yeah. I don't know. He's related to Julian.
It doesn't matter, yeah.
And so it's Julian that basically, instead of like in John Wick, not to spoil what happens in John Wick, but some bad stuff happens to John Wick and he needs to get revenge, some bad stuff happens to Julian. And so he's basically like, who is this guy that did this terrible thing to me? Mm-hmm. And so he kind of starts waging war against him. And Julian's intro is the most Hitman level intro thing. It's like, 47 year target is Julian. And it's like, he's like walking into this club. He goes and like does this like little dance and song and everything. Like, he protects the Abshack. This, you know, the Abshack, by the way, is this like, what was it?
It's whole like the 401k for like this organized crime in Russia.
It's like the whole like Russian mob, basically. It's the Philosopher's Legacy from Metal Gear Solid 3, where it's like all the nation's wealth or whatever in one place. And he literally like has to babysit this money, which mm-hmm. is just like piles and piles and piles of cash. And
that's like an impractical way to keep all your money, right?
Yeah, I don't know how crime works. I guess
I don't know how crime works either.
Yeah, it does seem impractical and dangerous based on what happens later on. But yeah, so Julian, I thought this character, I thought he was a really good, like, he is just a action movie bad guy.
Yeah.
He is just, like, Eastern European, sleazy guy. I think he's got, like, a mechanical foot or something. They show him, like, one thing. I thought that was going to be more of a thing
uh-huh.
when he gets out of the car. But, like, they don't really, like, lean on it. It's not like Kingsman, where the girl's, like, slicing people up with her capoeira feet or whatever, you know?
Yeah, his intro is, like, before he gets in the club, I guess he's in this big, like, Escalade type of car, and they miss the turn, so they just turn, like, in the opposite lane and just drive right over the divider and just unbelievably rude. And then when he crosses the street, he just pays no heed to the oncoming yeah. traffic, because it's like, oh, the world revolves around him.
Yeah.
Just total asshole.
And, like, without stopping for, like, they open the doors for him. Like, they really establish without saying anything mm-hmm. that he's a big deal, because, like, there's a line to get in the club, but the people are, like, open the door. He walks in. Somebody hands him a shot. Somebody hands him, like, a, you know, there's, like, a rail of Coke for him to do. Mm-hmm. He just walks up on stage, grabs a mic, does a little dance and stuff. And it's like, okay, all right, they're establishing this guy really, really well.
Yeah.
Here. And yeah, he's a really effective bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a crazy guy that wants to kill John Wick, and he's got like all this money and power
you mean,
at his disposal.
Hutch.
Sorry. Hutch, yes. All this like money and power at his disposal. So you mentioned earlier how like you never really feel like, even in these crazy situations, now that you know what mm-hmm. Hutch is capable of, there's a part where like a second home invasion is happening, but like you see Julian's entire squad of like, you know, 12 killers with like night vision goggles and lights on their guns and riot gear and stuff are like going into the house. And all you think is like, these guys are going to get fucked up.
Right. Yeah. It's really cool. It's because you don't feel that like stress or like, oh, God, this is going to be bad.
No, it's excitement.
Yeah.
Because it's like, yeah, any like realistic movie or character, it'd be like, oh, okay, well, here's the part where he gets kidnapped. And he does. But again, mm-hmm. he escapes immediately and kills the shit out of everyone.
Yeah. I really like how his wife kind of reacts to all this, because it seems like, you know, I feel like a lesser movie would have had her be like, oh, you can't do this again. You can't go back to this lifestyle.
Don't do this to our family.
Yeah. But she's kind of like, you know, like I mentioned earlier, there was like a coldness between them. They hadn't had sex in like months. And, you know, I think that she's kind of turned on by this, and he's a lot more aggressive now. And also, like, you know, it's just who he was. And now he's like embracing who he was, where he tried to like stuff it down, and that just had bad effects on everything around him. So instead of like discouraging it, it's like she's okay with it. You know,
it's similar to the early parts, like the first season of Breaking Bad, where it's like Walter is kind of this like hapless teacher or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then he like finds this confidence when he starts dealing. And like, cause remember, like it was a similar thing with him and Skyler, right, where like they hadn't been together, but then all of a sudden like he's got this confidence and she's into him again, mm-hmm, and all that. So yeah, it works. So that whole scene's great. He burns his own house down. He basically tells the family, get out of here, go someplace safe. Does a whole monologue to the like four bleeding out, you know, tactical gear guys in the basement. And then just like puts on some music. I didn't understand how he put like the record player down. And
yeah.
I don't know if it had like some igniting thing on it.
It must have had something like that on it.
Yeah, but he says like, oh, okay, well, bones will burn or melt at this. And so like no one's going to find any remains or anything because this basement can get to this temperature.
Yeah.
So it just fucks them all up real bad.
Yeah, it's really cool. Like, because he's killing people and disposing bodies in a way that only someone who's trained in the art of murder can do so.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Very, very efficiently. Like, yeah. I was going to say it's not really for show. But you don't really have to sit there and drink whiskey and play music for four bleeding out people and tell them your backstory. Well, that's not really efficient.
But how else would we know his backstory?
That's a great point. But yeah, he burns his house down, and then he just goes and like murders a bunch of people at, mm-hmm, the bank or wherever, and burns the obshack. So yeah. Billions, however fucking much money it was.
So his father, Christopher Lloyd, who's, yes, awesome in this movie.
Yes.
He's like, he just kind of looks like an old man in a nursing home. We just watch his old TMC, Turner Classic Movies, or TCM, Turner Classic Movies all day, and, you know, eats TV dinners. Just like a simple old man. But he's actually, like, operative, just like, mm-hmm, Hutch used to be. And so he still has this whole suite of abilities as well. And when Julian's men come to assassinate him at night, he's like, he pretends to be asleep and then just grabs the gun and just murders everyone. It's amazing.
Yeah. And the guy, the nursing home guy, comes in to tell him to like turn the music down or the TV down. And it's like just two bleeding out bodies right there. It was good to see Christopher Lloyd. Yeah. I feel like he is one of those universally beloved actors, you know, just, mm-hmm, he's just always so fun to watch. And, you just don't see him much anymore. He's very old, obviously, but he was moving around. You know, he seemed to be having fun with it. He seems all there,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I really think that the makers of this movie very much knew what they were doing with the casting,
mm-hmm,
because first of all, Odenkirk, already such a like a attention grabbing lead for a movie, mm-hmm, like this. Then you get Christopher Lloyd, this beloved actor you don't see anymore, who's also getting into like action sequences and stuff. But then his half-brother is the RZA of the Wu-Tang Clan.
Right.
And so it's just like, okay, at the end, there's no way not to look at this like trio in this action scene of like, it's Bob Odenkirk, Christopher Lloyd, and the RZA, mm-hmm, which is like the most unlikely trio of like action stars, like back-to-back shooting guns at people in a warehouse.
Awesome. And RZA has one of my favorite kills in the movie when he's like, seems to be like a sniper kind of guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
These three guys are attacking him, and they all happen to like align at the perfect time. So he does a triple headshot. So
that's some
cool
real video game stuff there. Yeah. And I don't know. I'm just, I haven't seen, I know he's been in a lot of movies, but like, I like Wu-Tang Clan a lot, and I know how obsessed they are with like action movies and stuff. So I couldn't help but just think how much fun the RZA was having, sure, like doing these scenes. So, there is the thing before, so that's the climax, but before we get there, there's, Odenkirk goes to the club that Julian works at. Really cool, just bold move where he just like, right in front of the stage that Julian's performing on, he's just sitting there like eating a steak, mm-hmm, you know, he's like the only guy at a table, can't miss him, you know, it's a statement thing.
Right, yeah, that was badass. And he's like armed with like a bomb, so he's like, he knows he won't get hurt or anything, but
yeah, he's got a claymore underneath a napkin tied to his hand, and so like when everyone surrounds him, it's like, oh shit, pull the napkin up and we're all gonna die if, mm-hmm, if we do anything to him. And then it leads to this car chase that's set to Heartbreaker by Heart. And it's just like, man, this is a movie that knows
what... I think it's Pat
Benatar. You're right. What is the... Because, okay, Heart was Magic Man and Barracuda.
Yeah, and a bunch of other songs.
Yeah,
sure.
Heart's awesome. And I probably thought Heartbreaker was Heart because of, you know, the word. That's right. Pat Benatar. That's right. I mean, with your best shot and Heartbreaker. Anyway, Heartbreaker is a great song. Like, that car chase is excellent. Because this is much more a like kind of gun action scene, mm-hmm, movie. But it, I mean, there's some car chase chops here as well.
Yeah, that was cool. And then he leads him to the his father-in-law's business, which he bought with like a ton of gold, which was pretty cool.
And his father-in-law is Sam Fisher, which is Michael Ironside. Yeah. Again, just the weirdest cast in this movie, but I loved it. And then it does the thing that I love it, and I feel like you're seeing it more now, where just action movies turn into Home Alone at the end. Like Skyfall did it, Rambo Last Blood did it, where it's just like, hey, let's hunker down and make a murder house and then have all the bad guys come here.
Yeah.
And this does that.
He's making all sorts of traps set and everything.
Yeah, yeah. Just like elaborate things. Oh, I love the part at the end when he sprints at Julian with the riot shield with the claymore on the front of it. And just the shot of it just fucking him up and blowing Odenkirk back. It's just a really fun third act.
Yeah, that's another example of like his smart offense. Like he did the math, like, okay, if I do this, I'm going to be blown back, but I won't be killed, and he'll actually be killed. So
yeah, yeah. And like, yeah, so the three heroes survive, RZA, Christopher Lloyd, and Odenkirk, which actually we did not see the mid-credits sequence. We backed out. I guess there is a scene where Bob Odenkirk and the RZA are in a RV filled with guns driving to an unknown destination, which... This movie seems like it'd be very easy to do sequels to.
Yeah, yeah. I'd be down for that. Yeah. Because it's like one of those things that just, even if the formula is similar, it's just fun to watch, you know? RZA had one of my favorite lines where he's like, you both got what you wanted and I got shot.
Yeah, yeah. And Christopher Lloyd turns around like, hey, what are you going to do, you know? Yeah, I would happily take as many more of these as they want to make. Because, like, I feel like... With something like a John Wick, there's this kind of gravitas and lore that they have to like kind of make good on. Whereas I feel like this, you could just kind of crank them out and give us another bad guy, give us another situation. Mm-hmm. We don't need to like, not that like John Wick is like this, you know, brilliant intellectual film, but like there's more serious lore going on.
Well, there's world building because they created a whole society that doesn't actually exist. You know, obviously I don't know the inner workings of the CIA, but I know that it's a thing. So it's probably easier to just kind of let the audience assume a lot, where John Wick, you kind of have to tell the audience what's going on and develop the world building, just like in video games.
Yeah, yeah. Like, we don't need to know more than this movie tells us about nobody's backstory. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fine. So, he's a badass. Let him kill people. Like, I just feel like action movies have been in a pretty good spot ever since, like, that first John Wick. Like, you're getting that really visceral, like, the Raid, John Wick, Dredd. Like, I guess it kind of predates the first John Wick. But, like, that's definitely maybe the pinnacle of that is the first couple of John Wicks. So, it's a good time for action movies,
I think.
It is
a very good time. Yes, indeed.
Yes. So, that is Nobody. I really enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it as well. Highly recommend it. I mean, I would hope you would have seen it before listening to this because we always spoil the shit out of what we're talking
about. That said, this movie, I think the action is the headliner here for sure. And it's a new movie. It was supposed to be released in theaters last year, obviously pandemic stuff. So it's one of those like rental, you know, $20 things. But like, well, I mean, this is a movie I would have bought two, you know, 16 whatever dollar tickets to for us to see in the theaters.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I know for a lot of people, this was their first movie in the theaters for, you know, the last year. So
that makes sense. And I'm guessing Fast and Furious coming out in June is probably going to be like the big one, you know, the big comeback, I think. So, but yeah, really, really good stuff. Highly recommend it. Well worth your $20 if you would like to throw it at whatever online streaming retailer you use. So with that, we are done with our Nobody chat, and we want to thank some somebodies, which are the folks that I kind of did that for the opening segue.
It's great. You should keep going.
I'll keep going. All right. It's our Patreon, patreon.com/paintingthestream. Keep it real simple. $1 tier gets you ad-free episodes.
Wow.
It gets you early access to every episode.
Wow.
It gets you access to the Discord.
Wow.
And most importantly, it gets for you a Bonk Who, written for you by Bonk. Bonk, do we have one this week?
We sure do, Daniel.
Who do we got?
This week, we are honoring our friend Dylan.
Dylan.
Dylan, if you're out there, buddy, thanks so much for your support. You're best. And here is your Bonku. Light pulled Dylan close. The spectrum manifested and consumed his soul.
I thought it was going to be a good thing when you're talking about like the light coming in or whatever. I thought like he was going to be bestowed with a gift or something. But then he just got eaten. His soul got eaten.
Seduced by the spectrum of light, and then it consumed his very being.
He got Shang Tsung'd.
That's right.
Which, by the way, stay tuned. Speaking of Shang Tsung, we're going to do Mortal Kombat. But, well, Dylan, thank you so much for your patronage.
Thank you, Dylan.
And another name that is not Dylan is Omar, which is a different name.
Let's check in on Omar. Where he has he been up to lately?
I feel like the name Omar has a couple different contexts for us now between The Wire and this. But no, this is Omar from Yelp, a guy we just randomly found, and now we're reading his Yelp reviews of places. This is his review of a Crown Motor Inn in the tri-state area.
Mm.
Okay.
This I'm is sure his... it's a fine establishment.
Well... you'd think so, but it's a one-star review.
Oh.
Here's Omar's review of the Crown Motor Inn. I just want to put into perspective that the saddest possible Valentine's Day you could have is going to the Crown Motor Inn with a married man and him buying you a KFC Twister from the KFC next door, and then after you're done, you take the bus back to the 2-train, lol. Another disgusting place in the hot tub. Oh, forget the hot tub. I wouldn't wash my sneakers in it. One star.
Was he the married man?
It's a mystery. I don't know what the story is here. That's a KFC Twister is a very specific thing.
Oh, man. I want to talk to Omar so bad.
I mean, he lives around.
The guy has stories for sure.
He does. He's a Yelp magician here. But that is Omar's review of the Crown Motor Inn. Ba-bonk.
Ba-bonk. Yes. Dan.
Can you do your George Thorogood? So weird. That's it for this week on Panning the Stream. Thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks to the patrons. Thanks to Tom Monda for the theme song. Also does the theme song for the Fire Escape cast. Find that as well.
It's
on
good
your,
shit.
Yep. Find that. Listen to that. But that is going to be it for Panning the Stream this week. We will be back next week.
Bye.
Bye.